Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Matt Kinnear, bringing you the first fall ball edition. Today, we talk to Coach Kevin McCune at Binghamton and Marist Coach Keegan Wilkinson, who experienced the shot clock for the first time in action this past weekend. Then, myself and Ty Zanders break down our recent visits for the True Fall All-Access Series. Ty went to Yale, checking in with the defending champs, and I went to Maryland, seeing what's up with the Terrapins. Enjoy.
We are chatting fall ball. We have Binghamton coach Kevin McCune on the line, who hosted a series of scrimmages against Marist and Syracuse this past weekend. One of the first looks at the new rules with intracollegiate play here. Coach, how did the scrimmage day go there in Central New York?
Hey, Matt. The scrimmage went well. I thought, certainly it was it's an early scrimmage for fall ball. I think all three of the teams were just kind of wrapping up their third week of, practicing full time. So certainly, not everything was perfect and, stick work, wasn't in mid-season form, but that was a productive day for all the teams. You know, it was a great opportunity for us to get up and down, and see the freshmen play a lot and, see how we do and see how, the teams kind of play with the new rules in place.
We'll talk a little bit about the new rules, but just talk about your own team a little bit. You know, what are some of the goals, especially in this early section of fall ball, you know, where you're getting back into the swing of things and just trying to figure some stuff out?
Mm-hmm. You know, we actually had the guys scrimmage really early on when we first got back on the campus in the, I think it was the third week of August, like August 22nd was the date. And, right after that, and getting to see the shot clock a little bit, you know, we kind of said our focus for the fall was going to be stick work and conditioning. And, it remains that, you know, here at the beginning of October. I think, the game is going to be faster. And there's going to be less downtime and less time, you know, standing around. So, the teams that are able to move it up the field quickly, and efficiently and be able to have the fresh legs to be able to push the transition situations and, you know, sub off the field quickly, and really not wasting any time, I think, is going to be to our advantage.
When you look at your guys' roster, you have a mix of, you know, you graduate some of your top scorers, some of your guys on defense who are key contributors, but you got a lot mm-hmm. of, you know, guys who put up some points returning onto this team. How's that mix been kind of maybe replacing some of that upperclassman leadership void from guys who graduated?
Yeah, you know, certainly we lost some guys that played key roles for us in the middle of the field and on both ends. Joe Grassi, Steve Petrelli, were two guys, the first kind of mind that you know, played all over the field for us, including man up and man down. So, those are going to be guys that will be difficult to replace, and we'll have to do it in different ways. I don't think we're going to have any one guy step into those roles. I think one thing that's been nice to see is we've seen, you know, our freshmen have the ability to make, some significant contributions on both ends of the field. You know, I don't think there are any guys right now that are, not fitting in or don't look like they belong out at the lacrosse practice. So that's exciting to see. And I think our seniors are doing a great job helping those guys get acclimated.
The new rules is obviously the talk of this fall right now. You got to see them and play with them against Marist and Syracuse. Just your overall impressions of what it did to the gameplay in those scrimmages.
Yeah, I think, one of the main things was that, like I said earlier, they're less standing around. I think one of our emphasis so far have been, trying to just be efficient with our time when we do have the ball, because now we not only have to play against the defense, but we do have to play against the clock as well a little bit. So we've worked on that, and I don't think we saw a huge impact on the game. You know, just being in the third week of fall ball, there's not a lot of scheming, as far as zone or anything like that. There wasn't any game planning going on, so. I don't know if we necessarily saw the full impact that new rules will have, but certainly I think there was a lot of action out there on the field, and I think that's an overall plus for the game.
How much does the discussion of the new rules kind of permeate your everyday practice in terms of your messaging to your team and the way you run drills and the way you do things?
Yeah, I guess it seeped in there a little bit. You know, we've had some, you know, half field sessions where we do put the shot clock on, and, you know, we've also had some where we don't put it on because, you know, I think it's important not to get ahead of ourselves and make sure we're doing a good job as coaches to teach, you know, some of the finer points offensively and defensively that we're looking for. And I think sometimes with the hectic pace, you know, of a drill or hectic pace of a half field setting, it can be, you know, tough to do that. And sometimes those things get lost. So I think we've, you know, made sure that we're incorporating it, but I don't know if it's something where it's, you know, an emphasis every time where, you know, we're blowing the whistle.
Interesting. I was at a practice just yesterday, and it was the same thing. You know, I never felt like the shot clock was the overarching theme of the practice session that I was at. There were certainly some parts where elements were included, but it didn't really take central focus with the day-to-day of what this team was doing. After this scrimmage that you just, these pair of scrimmages that you played, what was your message to your team and maybe your one overarching takeaway that you had for what you need to do going forward?
Yeah, well, I think it really remains the same as far as, you know, just work and conditioning for us and being our biggest focuses here in the next couple months. You know, we certainly have a lot of kinks to work out, you know, on the nuances of playing offense and defense. I think, you know, the clear something that I think will also be a focus for us schematically, you know, because it is a little bit different having to get out in 20 seconds. And there are some scenarios where you know, pick up ground balls under pressure or, you know, win a face off backwards and, you know, have a little bit less time to work with. And it can be, you know, it can be a little bit tighter. So I think, a focus schematically will be on the clear. And then, our biggest things though will continue to be, stick work and conditioning.
If people want to check out some of these new rules in action, the Twitter account for your program, Binghamton MLAX, has been fantastic all fall. You know, you guys really put emphasis on some of the multimedia aspects of the program, but you can check out the highlights there. Coach, you said that a few people commented on those highlights. How much of an emphasis and how important are things like this to just kind of growing the program?
Yeah, certainly, you know, social media and video content are huge. And, you know, I personally can't take credit for what goes up there. Our sports information contact, Lee Martino, does a great job of, you know, being around, you know, a lot of our team activities and, you know, putting up, you know, great highlights and pieces of practice and, you know, this past weekend of scrimmages. So it's a big thing for us. You know, certainly we want to continue to get the Binghamton University name out there, you know, not just as far as what our school is, but, you know, what we're doing on the lacrosse end of things. So that'll continue to be a focus for us.
Last question I have for you is kind of a broad question. Just what can we expect from the Bearcats in the spring of 2019?
You know, I think, you know, part of it due to the new rules, you know, I think we'll be a, you know, a little bit faster team. You know, we're certainly trying to push the tempo a little bit, you know, going from defense to offense. So, you know, I think we'll have a, you know, good pace to what we're trying to do. And, you know, I think it's been pretty clear for the first 3 weeks that, you know, we're going to have some young guys, you know, able to contribute. So that's exciting to see. I think, you know, we're continuing to try to bring in, you know, a higher quality student athlete. And, you know, I think our staff has done a great job in doing that with these freshmen.
Coach, appreciate the time and good luck with the rest of the fall.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you having me.
We are talking fall ball, and we have Marist coach Keegan Wilkinson on the line talking about a set of scrimmages down at Binghamton University where you guys played the Bearcats and played against Syracuse. Coach, what was it like to get out there early in fall and see some different colored jerseys and get after it?
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for having me, Matt. Incredibly excited to speak with you guys, but it was great. We opened up a bit earlier than we typically would have in the fall. So we were excited that Kevin and Coach Desko could come down last weekend and get some early scrimmages in. I thought it was really important for us as a staff and as a team to really get out early and kind of feel out the new rules You know, that way we're into October, and it's the second day of October, and we've got a pretty good taste of, you know, how much it'll impact the game, how much it'll impact us from a, you know, a strategy standpoint and kind of what we're doing. So now we have a few more weeks where we're in our full practice segment this fall that we can work on some different things and, you know, kind of see maybe some things we had missed or, you know, not prepared for, or maybe prepared too much for. So it was really important for us to get up there at the end of September, you know, and get a couple great games in. So we were excited about it. I know the officials, you know, catching up with them before the game, we're excited to get out there and feel it out as well, because there's a lot of different, you know, questions a lot of people have. So I think everyone was excited to get a taste of, you know, what it would look like. And we have really enjoyed it practice. So it was great to see it from a traditional game standpoint, how it would play out. And we couldn't be more excited about it, honestly.
Yeah, everyone, you know, I think people don't realize that it's not just the players on the field. It's the coaches, it's the players, it's the folks working the sideline and the scoreboard. It's the referees who are all getting used to this new era of college lacrosse. How prevalent were the rules when it actually got down to business and gameplay? How much did you think they had an effect on the game?
I think it had an effect, but I didn't think it was so overwhelming. You know, that if you walked into the game and you didn't know the rules had changed, I don't know if you would have noticed it that significantly. I think the tempo in terms of the subbing and the clearing is certainly increased at a new pace, which I think is, you know, really important. I think that's something that when the rules committee, you know, sat down in a room, you know, they got it right. I got to be honest, I'm a traditionalist at heart. My staff is, you know, traditionalist when it comes to the game, and we have such tremendous respect for the game and, you know, the history of the game. So it was a lot for us to wrap our heads around in terms of adding the shot clock and new rules. Honestly, it was a lot and something I wasn't crazy about. And then we started practice and we've really enjoyed them. And then when we got to the games, you know, I think some of the rules, they hit the nail on the head with a lot of them. I think the timing and the mechanics after that were altered of just having it 80 on a set clock, I think is a lot easier for the fans to comprehend, because it is a lot of different things going on in terms of the clocks and the way it's, you know, run by the officials. So I didn't think it was crazy or completely different. I did think there were some minor adjustments to the speed of the game that will certainly make for a much better product moving forward once everybody gets accustomed to them.
I know you don't want to tip your hand too much, but coming out of those scrimmages, did you feel like maybe you had some ideas of ways you could use the shot clock to your advantage, different things you might be able to do schematically?
Yeah, I think, you know, it wasn't much different than what we'd seen in practice. I think it just further enhanced, you know, some things we've been thinking about, the importance of our midfielders, you know, being able to play both ways, the timing and the rhythm of our substitutions, and the way that we're doing some different things in between the lines, I think are definitely the most prevalent things. And that we're going to sit down, you know, this week and continue to map out, you know, how we can continue to enhance, you know, some of our guys that were traditionally defensive midfielders, their skills offensively or between the lines, and then, you know, vice versa with our offensive midfielders, you know, getting them in the defensive film room and building them into a complete midfielder. So I think it certainly, you know, as a lot of people predicted, is putting a high value on midfielders that are versatile, you know, and can play both ways. And you think about guys like Matt Abbott and a couple of those guys that are playing with Team USA, the Bernhards, the Hosses of the world. I think that they would really, you know, fit well into this rule system. So I think it gives us kind of a way to map that out with our players of guys they could kind of look at and kind of evaluate their game. You know, where do we stand in certain areas and how good are we at certain things, I think is the most important thing moving forward.
Obviously, with the new rules and kind of shifting a little earlier in response to that, but what are some of the other things that the Marist Lacrosse program emphasizes in the fall? It's a short period of time to kind of be with the guys and get some stuff done. What are the things that you emphasize?
Yeah, I think the things that we emphasize, you know, on a daily basis is obviously skill development, you know, whether that's shooting or stick work. We're spending an awful lot of time in our practice segments on those two things, and ground balls and kind of building the culture. We haven't put too much in from a schematic standpoint, but I would say that we've put much more emphasis on our clearing and our substitution patterns than when we maybe had in the past couple of years, because it was so traditional, step it in the box, sub the guys on and off, and then run your offensive possessions. We have had to work more, you know, in slow break settings, and the speed and the tempo of our substitution patterns has been a really high priority for us, and something that I was fortunate to get down to Salisbury actually at the end of our season and watch them a little bit. And it just kind of ignited some different ideas because of the way they play and the way they've been traditionally, you know, running their substitution patterns and how their guys are getting between the lines. So really lucky to sit down with Coach Berkman and those guys and Coach Axel and kind of pick their brains a little bit. And those are some things we've implemented just in our practices is a little bit different than maybe we have in the past.
Probably no better person to learn from than Coach Berkman with anything in the sport of lacrosse. Your team, you know, you graduate a leading goal scorer, and you also graduate a really big piece at the back, Brian Corrigan, one of the great goalies mm-hmm. in Division I lacrosse the past few seasons. But you have a lot of young talent. There's a lot of sophomores and freshmen the past year that were really impact players for you guys. How's the identity, you know, with an eye towards 2019 coming together?
Yeah, I think our identity is starting to come together. Obviously, when you lose a piece like Anna Morrison, who is a four-year offensive starter and a part of a lot of really successful teams during his four-year campaign here, and a guy like Brian, it's not easy, you know, to replace. It's certainly much different, and we've had some guys that were very fortunate to work with them and learn from them and kind of watch, you know, what they did to be successful, but also take, you know, some of their own steps. So we're excited about the guys that are stepping into new roles in terms of their leadership and kind of that quarterback mentality that Gannon was so good at. And he did it for a number of years. So it's certainly a little bit different watching the guys this season, but I think that they're all excited, you know, to step up, and our freshmen have been tremendous at kind of coming back in and helping us instill the culture of this program, which is hard work and really tough attitudes, and just getting to work every day. So we got a great mix of guys. I know that they're all very hungry, you know, from a competitive standpoint, not only to replace Brian and Gannon, but Nick Nine, a couple of those other guys that have been very prevalent, but also just to get the program back, you know, on track after a year that, you know, left a sour taste in all of our mouths. So it's been short of motivation every night when we're getting to the stadium and getting under the lights.
Talking about the culture of the program, and one thing that permeates, you know, every aspect of this program is the legacy of Eddie Coombs. And, you know, I know you guys have a fall ball event that you've held for a number of years now. In a few weeks, you know, you guys are going to be getting after it kind of in his memory. Can you talk a little bit about the event and just how Eddie, you know, several years later, still has such an effect on the kids in this program and everything you guys do?
Yeah, it's, I appreciate you asking, and we're certainly really excited to host the event here at Marist in a couple weeks. I'm grateful to the Coombs and all their hard work in creating the Edward Taylor Coombs Foundation. But what we've been able to do through the tournament is help promote Eddie's legacy and who he was and why he was such a special young man and what he meant to our program. And obviously, at the foundation of that is promoting responsible decision-making and making sure that we're touching lives, you know, outside of our own program, you know, on campus, in his community, and through the lacrosse community, which has been so well received. And we're really grateful to have the teams participating in the tournament again this year. And I'm very grateful to my wife on the women's side, who's bringing in two other teams. So it's a full day of lacrosse on our college campus. We had started the tournament down in Horsham at Eddie's High School, which we thought was really important to connect the two communities, both the Marist lacrosse family and the lacrosse community with the Horsham community, and let them know that the support was there, you know, while they were going through, you know, a very troubling time, both his friends and his teammates, and then to help, you know, alleviate some pressure off the Coombs because they do so much for the foundation. We offered to move the tournament up to our campus actually a few years ago after we lost one of our water polo players in a tragic accident. We wanted to make sure that, you know, our own community here knew that there were a lot of people in their support. So we're very lucky. We were able to bring six teams in this fall on October 21st, a Sunday, on campus when school's in session. And we've been able to sell a t-shirt to every student athlete on our campus to help promote the foundation, which is really cool and helps us you know, when we're having a tough day, because I've obviously got two guys on staff and Dave Scarcello and JD who have been at the forefront of this thing for a long time and helping to spread Eddie's legacy. But we're able to bring in, we're really, really appreciative of Merrimack and Springfield who are now coming down for the third or fourth year in a row. And I can't think of two teams that embody, you know, kind of who Eddie was, like those two teams, two tough-minded competitive groups. So it makes for a really, really awesome day on campus. So would love to see the lacrosse community turn out to our stadium on October 21st and help us promote not only Eddie and his legacy, but a great foundation that Aaron Coombs, Eddie's sister, is now the president of, and Eric and Tina Coombs, his parents, have done such an amazing job of, you know, spreading the word and handing out scholarships in Edward's name. So we're really grateful to the Coombs and appreciate everything that your community and Inside Lacrosse and everyone else has done to help support the foundation and the tournament.
We are continuing to discuss fall ball. We have Ty Zanders here on the line. Coming to you after visiting Yale a week and a half ago, getting one of Yale's early practices as they tried to defend the national championship up there in New Haven. I've been to Yale practice. The thing that sticks out to me was just the physicality. Guys are going after each other. It looks like people are going to hurt each other. Something that really has crafted the mentality of what the Yale Bulldogs are. Ty, what did you see when you went to visit there?
Yeah, it was intense. I think just from the get-go, it was there was a lot of competition amongst each other. I think they really encouraged that and encouraged physicality and, you know, high levels of communication. So I think I just really enjoyed those aspects, and it's about what I expected, and then some. I think just to see how loud they were and physical and cutthroat, you know, really kind of sums up the program in so many ways. You know, not what you would expect from an Ivy League program, but we really learned a lot about them the last year, and you know, wasn't shocked to see their mentality in practice.
Certainly with what they bring back, they are going to be considered as maybe the number one team in the country headed into the 2019 season, definitely up there. But it's not to say that everything comes back and is perfect. There's a leadership void that they have to fill. You know, you look at Ben Reeves, he obviously won the Tourton for a reason. But there's some key guys who provide leadership on that team that have departed, that have graduated. What did you see in terms of people who might be able to fill that role?
I thought John Danangelis was probably the most impressive leader and not a shock considering he's a captain, the lone captain there. So to see John kind of, you know, bring the freshmen along and teach them some drills and, you know, really be loud and in charge of things, I think was good for Yale. They need that. It wasn't just Reeves. I think there's just so many guys that set the tone for them. You know, Warner, Keating, Mackey was excellent. So Danangelis was really superb in that sense, just kind of, you know, leading the rest of the guys along. I think they'll find the complementary leaders, you know, in these next few months.
You know, a lot of the focus on Yale this offseason has been with T.D. Irlen. He wasn't at the practice that you were at. He was, you know, interviewing for an internship, a very Yale thing to do. It's a remarkable thing about Yale. I've noticed, you know, over the years in the fall, they generally have various guys out for, you know, whether it's something work-related, whether it's something academic-related, or in a very unique case, football. There's a lot of overlap with the football program and the lacrosse program at Yale. Who are some of those guys maybe who are, you know, playing football right now, who we're going to see in the spring, who aren't on the field?
Yeah, so Spencer Alston is a running back for the Yale football team and ran for, I think, 130 or so yards in one of the first games. It was against Columbia. He was a former Ohio State lacrosse commit from South Lakes of Virginia in the Mad Lax program. A very tenacious 5'10 or so you know, athlete who is a long pull, but I could see them slash have gathered, you know, then maybe they'll throw a short stick in his hands and have him be a Tyler Warner-esque contributor in that sense. So between him and Jack Bistick, a 6'3 wide receiver and deep hole from Cardinal Gibbons in North Carolina, he was committed to Notre Dame for a long time and playing both at Yale. So those two are missing the fall. And then Robert Mooney, a senior for Yale, is playing soccer for them and getting some minutes there. This is his first year playing soccer with the Bulldogs after having a very good career at Lawrenceville in New Jersey. So being three long poles down and having some injuries as well is tough. And in general, it was just weird watching Yale practice without some guys I expected to see. Didn't think I'd see those guys, but Garnett was out, Erland was out, Jack Starr was had a screenwriting class. So a different fall for Yale, missing those guys I think Starr misses every Friday, and then you always miss the football guys. So to see them be full strength in the spring, it would be a promising thing for them. I think I mentioned to you guys they had six long poles, so you can't do a whole lot, can't scrimmage with six long poles. They did give long sticks to two freshmen who I expect to maybe play either D-Middy or stay on the defensive side of things full time with that 6 foot pole. That was Jake Warnow and Jack Oaken, two highly regarded freshmen. So they were very new and asking questions and figuring things out and totally clueless if you ask Andy Shea. But I think they'll get there. Just pretty bright kids you expect to see that type at Yale. So very curious to see if they have guys they converted that stay down low for Yale.
You know, it's just a program that's been known to just do things differently, do things its own way. So stuff like that, you know, would maybe affect other programs a little bit more, but it's kind of run-of-the-mill for Yale. You know, they kind of develop the complete person in addition to, you know, just their athletic achievements. But the reason we're talking about Yale is we're going to see them this weekend in one of the high-profile events of fall ball. You know, they're going to play the U.S. national team at noon at the U.S. lacrosse facility in Sparks, Maryland, on Saturday. It's essentially it's a mix of players who were there in Israel and won the gold medal, notably Michael Earhart, who had a fantastic tournament and was the MVP of that team. But it's also some guys who kind of didn't make the team, who were in the mix, who were going to be looking to kind of make their way onto that roster over the next 4 years. And Ty, I mean, to me, Yale matches up really well with these guys, you know, and I think this is a Yale game to win, depending on how long they keep starters in and the like of that many things. You know, obviously there's a bigger picture in mind. But looking at that, I'm really curious about Chris Fake and how he does against professional level talent, because I think right now he's the best defender in the game.
I think so too. I think right now he's definitely the best defenseman in college lacrosse. I think to see him match up with some of the world's elite attackmen will be pretty cool. I think that there are four attackmen on this USA squad that will be on the next team in 2022. I think Will Manny, Matt Cavanaugh, Marcus Holman, and Ryan Brown will all be in that team. Of course, with Brown and Holman being standouts this year, including a ridiculous shooting tournament from Ryan Brown. Not a shock. So curious who Fake will match up with. Likely Holman. But I think he matches up well with any kind of attackman, as we've said before. So I'm sure we'll see him guarding some different guys, and maybe not one guy in particular. But it'll be fun to see him and that Yale defense match up against those shooters.
Speaking of matchups, the matchup to end all matchup this spring was T.D. Erlin versus Trevor Baptiste in the NCAA tournament. That was one that just had a little bit of everything. And it turned out to be a fantastic, battle between the two of those. We'll probably see that again this weekend. You know, Erlin for Yale kind of making his debut in the blue uniform. And Baptiste is one of the faceoff specialists for the U.S. national team. But tell us a little bit about the guy that's, right there with TD, and that's Joe Newman. You know, he's the number one faceoff specialist in our incoming rankings. He's a guy that's been on the radar for pretty much forever. I'm wondering how much we're going to see him this weekend, and what does he kind of provide, and how does he have a different look than T-Day?
I think he's a smaller, type of guy, and very technical, and I wish I'd been able to see those two go against each other in practice, but I think they'll, and I felt this way when T-D made the decision, they'll make each other better. I think for Joe to have T-D to go against in practice every day will be very beneficial for him. You don't have that in club, you don't have in high school, anywhere else. You don't have that guy to go against in practice ever, you know, unless you're the men's national team. You seldom do. So to have someone like that for him and for TD to go against, I think will make them both better. I still expect, you know, TD to probably take 4 out of 5 of those faceoffs, you know, 80% of them, and Joe probably take 20%. But I wouldn't be shocked for them to go, you know, every other, you know, on Saturday. Who knows? You know, but they're both very capable, and I think just very exciting for Yale just to have some excellent faceoff guys every 2 years. With TD, I guess he's a junior now. Joe's a freshman. And then they just got committed to James Ball from Chaminade, who was a Navy verbal, who's the number 2 faceoff guy in the 2020 class. So I think the ball will be in the offensive side of the field for Yale for years to come. But I'm looking forward to kind of seeing what Yale does with their faceoff crew.
And depth of that position, extremely important. You know, Andy Shea told me this summer, if they would have played another game, Connor Mackey probably wouldn't be able to go. You know, that's just how much the toll of the season, and he got nicked up in the semifinal game. So, I mean, alternate history right there. If it's one game longer of a season, who knows what would have happened. Yale might still be looking for that national championship. But now, kind of looking through fall ball as a whole, it's a big weekend in terms of what's going on. You know, last weekend we had a few tournaments. It really kicks up this one and the next. We're going to see Friday night, the debut of St. Bonaventure. The Bonnies are hosting the Israeli national team Friday night. That's going to be up there near Buffalo. Saturday, Villanova at Loyola. It's going to be a 1 p.m. scrimmage down at Ridley Athletic Complex at Loyola. This is when I'm really interested in seeing the ramifications of the shot clock with both of those teams. Lots to watch on those teams, some freshmen, some returners. Obviously, Pat Spencer is on the short list for the Tourton, so we might get some brief action from him. And then the Bob Kemp Lacrosse Classic is Sunday. That's Penn State versus Virginia at Georgetown Prep. Ty, I know Virginia's a program you're pretty familiar with. You're going down there in a few weeks. As you kind of prep for that visit to Charlottesville, what are some of the things that you're watching with this Virginia squad?
I think, you know, for me as a recruiting guy, I'm definitely conscious of a class that will be very impactful, that I think will be very impactful on you know, in every position. Attack-wise, I think Xander Dixon and Peyton Cormier are excellent. You know, Cormier is a big body, and Dixon's very much in line with the type of guys they have, very slick and skilled and from a blue blood program. And then a lot of middies that I think could get some minutes. Jeff Connor stands out to me as a top 10 player, and then Cade Sostad down low, and Patrick Birkinshaw, you know, in between the pipes. So I bet we'll see 5 or 6 freshmen at a minimum get significant minutes against Penn State. How much, I'm not sure, but they have to like who they have between their newcomers as well as some of the guys they have returning. You know, will Ryan Conrad be fully healthy? Is he playing? I don't know. I'll see when I'm down there. But I do think that UVA will run and gun. I think they'll be better defensively. Despite losing Scott Hooper, I do feel that they'll be better on the defensive side of the ball. And then, you know, of course, the storyline would be, what's the goalie competition like? Alex Rode is very, very strong stopper, but when it comes to clearing, I think Birkinshaw is a much better fit and excellent in terms of putting the ball, you know, pushing the ball upfield and running that style that UVA likes to, just pushing the tempo. So very interested to see what they do as well and how they balance, you know, a lot of talent and offense.
You know, I'm planning to attend that Villanova Loyola scrimmage. Freshman I'm looking for is Chase Scanlon. You know, I've heard just such good things about him. And, you know, he was a guy who really stood out at the Minto Cup, had some great games, had some all right games. Let's see how he translates into NCAA play. But finishing the top and still sticking with freshmen, you know, I recently just went down to College Park and visited with Maryland and caught their practice on Monday. You know, they didn't have a freshman class that, for whatever reason, was on my radar as much as, you know, Virginia and Yale and some of these guys. But, man, I walked away from that practice just really, really liking what Maryland's freshman class brings to the table. I wasn't expecting that, but, like, when you look at our number 4 overall incoming recruit, Brett Makar, that kid is just incredible. He just, to me, he brought it. He was a mirror to Curtis Corley. They got some big, big guys on that defense. You know, he looked like he was ready for college. His footwork looked incredible. He didn't get, you know, confused or beat up in any single way, playing against some really, really, really good Maryland offensive guys. Why was he rated so high, and what do we expect from him over his four-year career?
I think there's a lot to like about Makar. I think to start, he's athletic. You know, I mean, he habitually ran for 200-plus yards, you know, in football and plays for, you know, one of the towns that in the country that's, like, most passionate about lacrosse and has a strong tradition. A lot of, you know, epic lacrosse players over the years that you know, came through the ranks in Yorktown. So with that pedigree and with that, you know, build that he has and physicality, tenacity, he's just a savage that's, you know, I think just tailor-made for the Big Ten. So he was a no-brainer to have as the number two defenseman, number four overall. I think he'll make a pretty big impact. And, you know, I can't wait to watch him play.
In addition, one of the best guys on the field was freshman attackman Kyle Long. Out of Springfield, an Under Armour All-American. He was number 20 in our rankings. And it's interesting, Maryland's assets that they have on the offensive end and the chess match that Coach John Tillman is going to be able to play with them. Bernhardt looked everything like we'd expect from him to look. Logan Wisnowskis, I thought, looked bigger, stronger, better. Bubba Fairman, still a little bit raw, but just looked fantastic at practice. And then there was Kyle Long, who to me is a guy that just instantly makes this offense so much better. He's not as big as those guys, but he looked like he was a college-ready guy. He could handle the physicality of it. He didn't back down from anything. And he was just a fantastic feeder. But Ty, seeing him over his career, is he a midfielder or is he going to be an attackman?
I think it depends on the day, really. I think that it's one of those good problems to have a kid that can play both, and I think that he will. He is, without a doubt, one of the best feeders, if not the best feeder I've ever seen from the midfield. Has played a lot of attack, but has just that special vision and put up, you know, somewhere between, you know, 200 and 350 assists at Springfield in the Philly area. So, not the biggest, maybe not the most athletic, but has a good first step. Has just a special feel for the game and a pretty solid shooter. I think anytime that you have a kid that is that special as a feeder, you maybe overlook the shooting and he can finish. So another kid that I'm looking forward to seeing and will probably surprise pretty early and make an impact.
That was a great day down in College Park. You can check that out as the start of our True Fall All Access series. We'll be going to a bunch of different programs, you know, getting the behind the scenes look at all the guys and telling what, you know, giving a day in the life of what practice is like at these top tier lacrosse programs. So check that out with Maryland. Also check out our coverage this weekend from all the big fall ball tournaments. We're going to continue that along as well as bringing you weekly podcasts, recapping the action, and take care.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.